welcome to episode 77 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we'll talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Sandy, and this week, I'm joined by fellow Outlander Travel agents, Elizabeth and Lindsay. On last week's show, we talked to Elizabeth's sister, Linda, about her experiences living in Hong Kong. This week, we'd like to welcome her back and pick her brain about another bucket list place of mine in Asia, Japan. Japan is made up of almost 7,000 islands, but 97% of its land area is comprised of its four largest islands. Honshu is where you'll find the capital, Tokyo, and it's also the hub of Japan's love affair with pop culture, which is why my kids love Japan and really want to go there. You'll also find Kyoto on this island, where you can visit Buddhist temples and gardens. And I have lots of questions for you, Linda, so let's get started. So tell me, why were you in Japan? Was it business or pleasure?
Most of my trips to Japan were for business, but I fell in love with Japan, so I started going for pleasure quite a bit as well. Particularly when I was living in Hong Kong, I could travel there really easily.
So how easy was it, like a puddle jumper kind of thing?
No, it's actually Hong Kong to Japan is still a good, 7 hours so on a plane, but for my lifestyle, that's kind of a puzzle jumper. But it's well worth the trip. It's just such, and I should say that's specifically for getting to Tokyo. Like, you could get to, other parts of Japan faster because it's a long, skinny country. So you tend to have big variances in getting to different parts of Japan.
So I know when I was researching Japan and saw the 7,000 island thing, I don't think that you actually, people probably don't go to 6,950 of them, right?
Like most places, most of the population is concentrated in a few of the major cities. But I will say that parts of Japan that are less populated can be really stunningly beautiful. I mean, it's an absolutely gorgeous country with amazing culture behind it. So it's worth it if you have the time to get off the beaten path and go to some of the more remote places, because they're really quite stunning.
It is. It's part of the Ring of Fire, right? So it's a volcanic. It's all volcanic. So So that explains a lot of the dotted, little islands everywhere.
Just wherever. It's also why it's such an earthquake prone country. But what a lot of people don't realize, because you hear about the major earthquakes, is all the architecture and buildings in Japan have really been built to accommodate earthquakes. So, you might experience several small earthquakes and it's very, very safe because the city has been built to handle it. The buildings are built to handle them.
That's so smart.
Mm-hmm. And there's some very old buildings there. They've been there for a very long time. It's not like this is modern technology that did it.
So did you mainly, well, it sounds like you've been quite a few times, so I'm sure you didn't just hang out in Tokyo. You kind of
Most of my trips have been to Tokyo because obviously that's an important business hub. And Tokyo itself is really huge. It's a very, very big land-wise city. So you can kind of stay in Tokyo for weeks on end and never ever get bored, but it's not months on end. But I have also been to Mount Fuji. I've been to Kyoto, and I've been, even all the way down to Hiroshima. And Osaka as well. So I've been in various places across Japan, but Tokyo definitely the most.
So tell me about Mount Fuji. Is that an active volcano, or it's the largest mountain?
It is. It is an active volcano, although not, regularly active. But it is one of the most beautiful hikes you can imagine. It's, there's certain times of year that you want to hike Mount Fuji and certain times you don't, just because of visibility. But it is just a beautiful, beautiful place to visit. And a great hike, and it's not, frankly, it's challenging, but it's not impossible for most people to do. So it's definitely something worth a trip.
So back to Tokyo, I am a tall person, and you and I are related, so we'll just reveal that you're also a tall person. And I'm kind of intimidated by Tokyo. I feel like I'll literally stick out like a sore thumb. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, you'll stick out like a sore thumb, but not really because you're tall. More because, culturally, Japan is very Japanese. So there are expats that live there and everything else, but it's not culturally diverse like the U.S. or some other countries. Excuse me. So, So, you know, everyone tends to be Japanese. So you will look different. You will be taller than most people, certainly most women. But there are quite a few tall men in Japan that, you know, that you wouldn't feel completely out of place. And it's such an amazing sort of mass of people together that even being tall is a little bit of an advantage because you can kind of see over everything.
I've seen that subway YouTube video where everybody's just pushing onto the subway. That's kind of scary. Is it like that everywhere, or is that just the subways? Is that just rush hour? Is that
pretty much just rush hour? I mean, you can other times on the subways, it's not that bad. And the reality is, the culture in Japan is extremely polite and extremely clean and extremely efficient. So even when you see that kind of, you know, that many people, yes, it's a ton of people all at once, but it isn't scary or sort of overwhelming because everyone is incredibly polite and everyone's just trying to get home and get on the train. So
I can respect that.
But work hours in Tokyo are fairly structured. So therefore, you tend to have everyone, you know, rush hour is a really specific thing. It's not that, you know, there's a lot of flex time in Japan, so you tend to have people going in and out at the same time.
So their culture is that they work more hours than us even, though, right? I mean, so what is a business day like there?
It's an extremely hardworking culture. I mean, you'll see everything from people that tend to work what you would call a normal 9-hour day because of the type of job they have to, you know, I've known people who, in you know, super dedicated to their jobs are there until 10 or 11 at night. It's not that unusual. It's also fairly common to go out with your colleagues to a karaoke bar or somewhere, you know, after work and sometimes quite late into the evening. The workday doesn't start as early as it does here, so you tend to have things going later into the night. Tokyo is definitely a very night town. But yeah, it's an extremely hardworking culture and very... It, you know, quality of work is extremely important there.
So this is going to be my cheesy question of the night.
I'm
going to tie it into Epcot because this is my big experience. So my kids love the department store in Epcot, the Japanese department store. But and they love it because of the Hello Kitty, the Pokemon.
Right.
They love the Pokemon. But basically any obscure Japanese cartoon that they're watching, they can find there. But in the back of that pavilion, there's a museum, and it used to be dedicated to manga, but they've changed it, and now it's cute culture. And it has, like, all the little itty-bitty things. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's so that's really huge there, like the Harajuku and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely massive. And one of the places I definitely recommend seeing is Harajuku, because Harajuku, as a district, which is it's a district in Tokyo. Tokyo has lots of different districts. And the Harajuku district is just, it is creativity unleashed. It's, you know, design and, yes, the cute culture and everything else, but you just see such amazing expressions of creativity there that it's fun just to walk around. And in general, the concept of design and, frankly, also things that are made small in Japan is quite important. You know, there's not a whole lot of room in Japanese houses. There's not... You know, families live together and things like that. And so you have a lot of people in a small space. And so you see some of the most beautifully designed and intelligently designed things in Japan. You're like, why didn't we have that in our home? Because that's just genius. This is like this one little box that does everything, including like, you know, cook your dinner or whatever. And really just, it's amazing stuff. So it's worth a trip to Harajuku and some of the more designed districts in Tokyo to see some of that kind of come to life.
What about like the Pokemon and Nintendo stuff? Yeah,
huge. Huge,
yeah.
Gargantuan. You'll get weddings themed that way. You'll get
Wow, that's kind of cool. Well, you know, cool in that not very cool way. You know, nerdy way.
Well, I know there's like a Hello Kitty airplane, and you know, there's crazy. Yeah,
that's Taiwan.
Oh, is it?
Really?
Just gonna throw a dart at the back. So in Japan, what are some other must-dos that are actually in Japan that you should do while you're in Japan?
Can you take that Taiwanese airline to Japan?
But to be clear, I'm just saying that the airline is Taiwanese. But yes, Hello Kitty is in Japan. So Sorry, what were you saying?
I was talking about must-dos in Japan. And, I mean, both in Tokyo, but then in larger Japan, like other things that you might want to make sure that you see.
Yeah, so, well, let's cover Tokyo first, just because there's so much there.
A lot to cover.
And interesting stuff to see. So the Meiji Shrine in the Shibuya district is one of the most popular things to go see. It's in the middle of this beautiful park, and you walk to the center, and it's just this gorgeous, gorgeous shrine in the middle of a very, very lush garden. And the coolest thing about it is you tend to be able to see weddings there. So often you'll go and you'll see couples getting married in traditional, you know, bridal kimonos, and they'll be walking through the temple. And it's cool to see that part of the culture. Obviously, you know, you can take pictures and stuff, but it's not something you would go up and start having a conversation with them. But at the same time, it's really beautiful to see. The Imperial Palace, so that's the residence of the emperor. It's also a former castle. You can only go on the grounds there, so it's important to know that you're not going to actually go in and be walking around buildings and houses. They only let you walk through the gardens and the grounds. But they do have tours, and it's a really beautiful spot in the middle of Tokyo. I was reading an article not long ago that said the amount of land, because it's this big walled park area, and the amount of land, the value of that land, because Tokyo is so valuable as far as real estate, is more than the entire value of California.
Wow.
Because of size and value of Tokyo real estate.
Wow.
So, and I can see that. We already talked about Harajuku. A fun thing to do, particularly if you like food and or you like sort of exploring where food comes from, is the Tsujiki Fish Market, which is also called the Tokyo Fish Market. So this is where they actually buy and sell the large tuna that's used in sushi restaurants and in high-end restaurants. And like one tuna fish can go for $30,000.
Wow.
You know, these are huge, high-quality.
Was this place the one, did you see the documentary of the guy that I think it's Hiro? Is it Hiro?
Yeah.
Dreams of Sushi or something like that?
Yeah. That was awesome.
So
it's in there, and it's really cool to see. You have to get there early. It's like you have to get there at like 5 a.m., and you have to walk through in a certain order. They're very regimented. You need to call ahead and make sure they're actually doing tours. As you can imagine, they're very careful about it because, A, these are very valuable fish. Now, they're large enough, you're not going to walk out with a tuna. But
you don't want your child to fall on it.
It actually can be. It can be a dangerous place to be. These fish are all frozen, and they're, you know, the floor is wet, and you know, so they're very careful about people coming through. Mm-hmm. But one of the cool things about it is you have the fish market inside, but then just outside of the fish market are all of these food stalls, including sushi stalls, and people will wait in line for 2 hours for some of the best sushi stalls to have breakfast sushi and a beer. While, you know, right after they did the fish market. And there's places where you can have, Japanese knives made, which are incredible, like right there. And there's amazing coffee shops and what have you. But it feels extremely local. But some of these sushi places are some of the best sushi you'll ever have.
So you can watch them forge knives for you right there in front of you. Wow.
Yep.
That's what my boys would want.
That's so cool. I mean, that's awesome. I know exactly how this knife was made. I watched them do that. So cool.
Yeah. It's really cool. So, and then there's also the Tokyo National Museum. There's a lot of museums in Tokyo, but the National Museum has got a lot more of the history in it. Tokyo Tower, which looks a lot like the Eiffel Tower. You can go up in it, you can see around Tokyo. And then, of course, one of the must-dos, and I can't do it myself. I've been many times, and people have run away screaming, but karaoke. It is a cultural, you know, it's just so important in Japan, and it's a fun way you can get a group together and get a private room. It's just a lot of fun. So,
with it being so important, are people really good at it? Or is it just so it's not like karaoke in the United States where you sort of have to clap politely because it was terrible, but you lived through it.
You have that too. You have that too. But, but you have some people who take this really, really seriously, and it's a big deal for them. So, so the karaoke bars are just a lot of fun. So that's Tokyo. Outside of Tokyo, we already talked about Mount Fuji. I really think that Mount Fuji is worth the trip. In the opposite direction, I love Kyoto. Kyoto is incredibly beautiful. There's all sorts of temples and gorgeous places to walk through there that you can see. And also the food in Kyoto is, it's kind of an art form. So you'll order a dish and it can just be incredibly beautiful. But one of the best things to see in Kyoto is the Kinakajuni. Sorry.
Nice.
Which is the Golden Temple. It's over a body of water, and it reflects off the water. It's one of the most visited temples in the world, the Buddhist temple. It's just beautiful. It really, really is breathtaking. And as the day changes, of course, the light changes because it's gold. So that's really, really beautiful. And then Osaka has the Osaka Castle, also great for food and culture. Osaka is kind of the home of my favorite food, which is okonomiyaki, which is it's kind of called Japanese pizza, but it's basically, I call it more like a Japanese shredded and scattered and smothered from it's basically, it's shredded yams mixed with flour and turned into a pancake, but you can kind of have any meat or seafood added to it that you want, and they cook it in front of you on a grill, so it's like a big pile of
deliciousness,
and then it's topped with this sauce and then bonito flakes that kind of wave in the heat, so it looks like they're alive, but they're actually just really thinly shaved pieces of dried ahi tuna.
Why have I not seen this in a food truck? Because when you were talking about Hong Kong last week, I have seen dumplings.
I think dumplings are a bit easier to do. That sounded kind of complicated.
It's actually not that complicated, but for some reason you don't see it as much in the U.S. I mean, there's only a few places, even in San Francisco. You'll find it a lot in Hawaii, but really the best place to get it is Osaka.
So we'll have to
go.
Yeah. So if we want to go there and have the okonomiyaki, what's the best way to get there? Where would we fly to if we wanted to start in Tokyo and go down to?
Yeah, so Tokyo is the most common place to start, and I think where people get fairly confused with flying into Tokyo, so there's two airports. There's Narita Airport, and there is Haneda Airport. So Narita is actually pretty far outside of the city. You do not want to take a taxi cab from Narita into the city. It'll cost you almost your entire vacation budget. So I don't suggest that.
Are there trains or anything that run in?
Okay. There's an airport train from Narita that's quite efficient, but even the airport train takes a little more than an hour. So it's not terribly convenient, whereas Haneda is pretty much downtown, you know, or as close to downtown as you can get. And you're at your hotel within 20 to 30 minutes by taxi. So Haneda is a much better airport to fly into, assuming you have a flight in, you know, you can get a flight in Haneda. It is a smaller airport, so it might be that you have to fly into Narita. But if you do fly into Narita, then the two important things to remember are take the airport train, which is easy enough to find, and there's lots of signs to direct you there. And plan for a lot of time both getting in and out. Because once you get to the train station in Tokyo from Narita, you're then going to have to take a taxi from there to get to your hotel. So both leaving for the airport and coming back, you're going to have to plan a lot of time.
So how expensive is Tokyo?
Yes.
Extremely expensive. And it's shocking to people often when they see the hotel room they get for that expense. You know, the hotel rooms, it is not unusual to have a hotel room that you can stretch your arms out and touch both walls at the same time. So hotel rooms in Tokyo can be very small and very expensive. The food and everything in Tokyo can be very expensive. And you tend to see a lot of people traveling on business because of that, because they can expense it. There are less expensive things to find. It's just much harder to find them that actually speak English. So
a family of four traveling to Tokyo would be a real challenge.
It would be a real challenge. I mean, not from a safety or kid perspective. There's lots for kids there. But it is expensive, and you need to plan a little bit in advance. And again, with a little bit of planning and, you know, looking at some, you know, different websites and stuff to find the better deals on food, you can save a lot of money. And, you know, by forcing yourself to use the subway. Again, the subway is very clean, very efficient, very, very fast. The best way to get around Tokyo, far more effective than a car because, you know, traffic is terrible and Tokyo is huge. So for a family of four, You'll actually see it's sort of a cultural phenomenon that, you know, most Japanese children are riding the subway by themselves because it's that safe, you know, at very young ages, 7, 8, 9, they're on the subway by themselves. So it's easy to take your kids around Japan. You just have to think carefully about where you decide to eat and where you decide to stay in order to maximize your dollar.
Now, it sounds like two rooms is almost a given. Like, you're not going to be able to find very many that will sleep four people.
Yeah, I wonder if I would need three rooms for our family. So another option, if people are considering this, is they do, there are a number of cruise lines that go around Japan. But you're not going to be visiting, you know, somewhere like Kyoto, right? Well, how far? Kyoto is inland, right?
Yeah, you might be able to do
it. It could be like a day trip. From what I was reading, when I was researching, you want to kind of look at your port time and see how much time you actually have in your destination. You might want to spend a couple days in Tokyo before you But that would be a good way to, because once you're, if you're on a cruise, then you have your rooms, you have food, you know, and you don't have to keep unpacking.
Well, and, you know, and I'm sure there's also tour groups that that can help you get around and make the most out of your dollar as well, too. But it's not... I think the thing that makes Tokyo or Japan in general the most expensive is because people are nervous about traveling there without help. Mm-hmm. They tend to take the more expensive forms of transportation. They tend to, you know, take things like that. The Japan Railway, which is the bullet train, which can take you to Osaka or Kyoto in almost no time at all. Like, normally you would fly to get to Kyoto from Tokyo.
On the bullet train, but you sort of are flying.
It's one of the fastest bullet trains in the world. It's extremely efficient. It's extremely safe. It's a really cool ride. And it's not that expensive. It's, you know, it's not cheap, but it's way less expensive than a flight. And the subway, getting around Tokyo on the subway is very inexpensive. So I think it's not that hard to figure out how to travel intelligently in Japan without spending too much money. But you have to kind of be willing to take a few chances and take some public transportation and stuff like that, which I think is a great experience. But, you know, Japan is so incredibly safe. It's very easy to get your family around.
So let's just say I decide to be adventurous and I get myself lost. So how easy is English, you know, readily spoken? Am I going to be able to find my way back?
The percentage of people that speak English is going to be a bit of a challenge. Okay. So you will eventually find someone who speaks English, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they know how to tell you how to get back.
Right.
Obviously, if you go to the tip that we talked about with Hong Kong and you have a business card with your hotel name on it, somebody's going to get you there.
Yeah.
And all the taxi cabs take international credit cards, so you're never going to be totally stuck. I will tell you that Japanese streets are not arranged in a perfectly neat grid.
Napoleon didn't get to Japan.
Pittsburgh isn't either.
And so, you know, just looking at a map or just trying to look at the streets can be a little tough. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that Google Maps works extremely well. So if you invest, the best thing to do is to make sure that you get a SIM card when you get there that has a data plan on it. And using Google Maps, you can pretty much find your way anywhere.
Awesome.
The Google Maps in Japan is incredible, particularly in Tokyo.
Considering Apple Maps got us lost in San Jose, California, sort of good to know.
I need to research more of the SIM card thing because I never, like, bust my phone open and switch SIM cards and stuff.
So my recommendation, which, you know, considering how often people change their phones now, is to buy an older version of an iPhone or an Android phone online, or just save one of your old phones the next time you upgrade and just pop out the SIM card, as long as it's not a locked iPhone, which a lot of them are.
Older ones.
But, yeah, but, you know, an Android device is something else. I don't usually take the SIM card out of my current phone because I like just having that accessible and I don't want to mess with it. But just get a second phone and, you know, pop a Japanese SIM card in. They're available at all the airports. Just say you want one data. And
that's a really, really good tip.
It is. Yeah. Well, and you can get disposable phones too, right?
Yeah.
Some
hotels will actually lend them.
Yeah, so like track phones and things like that it's a thing. You can do that. Okay. So that's also an option if you don't have your own spare phone. If you've donated your phones or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I have an old phone that I was going to upgrade. It's really old. It's
like it'll work. Real. It'll work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't throw away the charger.
Yeah.
Right. Which, by the way, is another important thing to know. Japan is one of the few countries you're going to go to that has the same plugs and same voltage as the United States. So every piece of electronics you have in the U.S. will work in Japan.
Well, that's good to know.
So that is one of the easy things about going to Japan is you never have to worry about adapters or any of that stuff because it's 110 voltage and it's the same two-prong plug.
Nice. So tell me about the toilets. I'm hearing that.
Yeah, we can talk about the toilets. Well, I was going to say, I mean, back in when we took in one of the older episodes when you were on with us, we talked about Asia at large, and we talked about the squatty potties and the difficulties that I have with those. Japan, that's not Japan, though.
No. I mean, there are some in Japan, to be clear. But Japan has elevated the toilet to an art form. It's pretty incredible. They will warm you. Some of them play music for you. Oh my gosh. Most of the ones that I've had in hotel rooms, like as you walk up to the toilet, it opens for you and turns on like a little light show to welcome you. And then they have all sorts of front cleansing, back cleansing, side cleansing, drying. They have a little hair dryer feature that comes out. It's not drying your hair.
Well.
But, yeah, I mean, the toilets in Japan are truly incredible. Like, they do so many things. It's really quite funny. And it can be a little disconcerting the first time you sit on one and it's warm.
Like, yeah. Wait, that's not right.
Who was here?
No, in fact, it's actually probably the cleanest toilet you're ever going to use in your life. And it's just welcoming you because it doesn't want to shock your system. But it's good to know, too, because some of the toilets, like the controls, are actually on the side of the bowl. Like, you can see them there. And some of them, they're actually on the wall, so you just have to kind of look around and figure out where they are. Ironically, most of them, the actual mechanism that lets them flush is usually still the traditional flush mechanism. It's kind of, not always the button. Sometimes it says flush, but most of the time it's actually still the same little flushy handle you would see on a normal toilet. It's the rest of the features that have, like, the full, you know, touchpad.
So when you say buttons, you mean like there's a control pad for the toilet?
Yeah, there's a control pad.
Like a remote control, except
it's
not remote.
It's remote, but sometimes it's one of those like just pads where the buttons are kind of squishy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like,
you know. If you want squishy buttons on your toilet.
It's one piece of plastic that has like just squares drawn on it, so of course they can clean it easily.
Is it to distinguish the features on the buttons? Because my fear would be I wouldn't want to push anything.
You don't know what's going to happen.
It folds itself up into a box.
Well, so the good news is no matter which one you push, as long as you're actually sitting on the toilet when you push it, you'll be fine. Nothing. Never, ever, ever push them when you're just standing and looking at the toilet, because that's when bad things happen. So, as long as you're present on it, you're totally fine. But usually they kind of have, like, they'll have, I don't know how to say this without being indelicate, but the front cleansing option will usually have a picture of a woman on it, and the back cleansing option will just have a person. Because it can be
like a gender neutral person. There's
because the front cleansing usually tends to only be for women. And then the hair dryer one has like a little cloud, you know, looks like air coming out. They're pretty easy to distinguish.
That's awesome.
We'll just send one of my kids in first, Lindsay, and then they'll come out and tell us what the alphabet is.
And then you'll just be looking at them,
and they'll probably come out all wet.
I'm like, it's a water park in there.
It's great, though. I mean, you think about it. It's like somebody has that job to design toilets.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody takes great pride in it. I mean, it's great.
I don't know why the rest of the world hasn't done this.
So
you'll see, like, people have them imported. They started to become popular in the U.S. You'll see them.
There's actually, I posted months ago on our Facebook page, about not just Facebook, on Twitter too, because this is important, but there is a toilet museum in Tokyo. I think it's in Tokyo. It's in Japan. It may not be in Tokyo proper, but a whole museum devoted to the art of the toilet.
Well, and they're in Tokyo Disneyland.
It's different.
Well, I will also say that there are several restaurants across Taiwan and Japan that have their toilet bowl restaurants, and you eat out of mini toilet bowls.
No.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
Yes, and some of the stuff looks like meatballs and things. That, things.
That would be like a Halloween thing.
I'm a pretty adventurous eater. I didn't get to be this size by being picky, but I think I would have issues.
You got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're one of those people where it's got to look like what it is. not for you. Yep.
So we're running out of time. We need to talk about booze.
So
everybody knows about Japanese sake. So can you advise a little bit on sake and then maybe talk about some things that we might not think of? I'm not a big fan of Japanese beer, but that's only the beer that I get here. Is it better in Japan?
I like Japanese beer. There's a lot of microbrews coming up in Japan now that are quite good. I'm still a bigger fan of the whiskey and the sake. I think that's sort of my preferred beverage of choice when I'm in Japan. I don't tend to drink much wine. Sake is probably one of my favorites, and you sort of have warm sake, cold sake, filtered sake, and unfiltered sake. So it's usually a good idea that you can explain to them that you prefer something that's more dry or something else to try to help them narrow it down. Unfiltered sake, which is cloudy, it's got the rice, sort of some of the rice pulp in it. I like it a lot, but it tends to be sweeter, so I tend to only drink that sort of towards the end of a meal. Normally, I like a dry sake. I always drink my sake cold. Warm sake tends to be lower quality sake.
Oh, that's interesting.
One of the cool things about sake, and this is partially true across most of Asia, but also in Japan, you'll sometimes, when you get sake, they'll put a glass into a wooden box, a small wooden box that's slightly larger than the glass. And when they pour your sake for you, they have it run over into the wooden box a little bit, which is really all about good luck and good fortune. So it's not that they're being floppy. It's sort of a show of like, or a wish of good luck and a show of respect.
Is it sort of like your cup running over, basically?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
So don't be confused if they overpour it. And yes, you can drink what's in the wooden box if you want to. I usually do it by dumping it into the glass after I've drank some out of the glass. It's not very easy to drink out of a wooden box. But
so you've tried it, you admit.
So there's that. And then there is Japanese whiskey. Japanese whiskey is some of the best whiskey in the world. So if you like scotch and you like whiskey, there's quite a few whiskey bars in Japan that you can learn a lot and really experience some incredible whiskey.
So would you say that to a Scotsman? I mean, is this like...
Of course. And I would, I'm pretty sure most Scotsmen would appreciate an Irishman and... whomever else would appreciate
people from Kentucky. Tennessee.
Would appreciate the fact that there's great whiskey from everywhere. But
that's interesting. I'll have to let my husband know that because he's
Oh, so now you can go to Japan. They have good whiskey.
That was always on the list. They always wanted to go there. But that's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a fun place to try different drinks. But sake and whiskey are my favorite.
All right, well, on that note, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, then click on podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast or search for Fly Away. Or you can email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you. Special thank you to Linda for joining us once again. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you so much.
And on behalf of Elizabeth, Lindsay, our amazing engineer and editor, Heidi, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly.